How many of us have heard, don't automate a bad process? I would tell you that technology has turned that on its head. What was old wisdom of don't automate a bad process, I tell you today, go automate everything you can and then optimize it from there.
Welcome to Technovation. I'm your host, Peter High. Our broadcast today comes from our most recent MetaStrategy Digital Symposium, and the topic was advancing digital capabilities in non-digital native organizations. The panelists who spoke on the topic were Srini Krishnamurthy, the Chief Strategy and Information Officer of FM Global, and John Russell, the Chief Information Officer of Northrop Grumman. The gentleman who led that conversation was MetaStrategy partner and East Coast lead, Alex Krauss. I hope you enjoyed the conversation.
And now for a word from our partner, ASAP, and the company's founder and Chief Executive Officer, Gustavo Sapoznik, whose mission is to build machine learning products to solve some of the world's largest and most difficult problems. Well, Gustavo, take a moment, if you would, and describe ASAP's business.
We have a very, very simple mission. Our mission is to end bad customer service. It doesn't just mean the relatively miserable experience that we tend to have as consumers with the enterprises. It's more broad than that. The problem of customer experience, more broadly defined, can be really thought as a three-legged stool. One leg of the stool is the enterprise itself. Another leg of the stool is the customer. And the third leg of the stool is the agent that works for the enterprise. So what's remarkable about this problem is that all three legs, I can argue perhaps successfully, are very broken. If you are an enterprise, you truly dislike the idea of how much money you have to spend in this domain. So the economic problem for enterprise and how much OPEX this represents is just staggering. For customers, we're all customers of companies, so we understand the frustration. And agents have one of the highest attrition rates of any job type in the world. All of this to say we have this very simple mission of ending bad customer service for all of those constituencies.
And now on to the interview.
So as many of you know and have experienced, advancing and maintaining digital capabilities is a tall task. But it's even more difficult if you work in organizations that are not digitally native, those that have been in existence and operating before the onset of the digital age. And unlike native digital organizations, those that were grappling with some of those things and are making the transition, it becomes much harder, and it touches on essentially everything that's part of your organizational DNA and your operating model, from strategy to execution. We heard about data and everything else, not least, of course, culture. And I'm very proud and humbled to be joined by two amazing executives who represent organizations that were definitely born before the digital age. FM Global is almost 200 years old, and Northrop Grumman has a lineage that traces back to the 1930s. So please allow me to introduce John Russell of Northrop Grumman and Srini Krishnamurthy of FM Global. John is the CIO of Northrop Grumman. Many of you know Northrop Grumman, a $39 billion multinational aerospace and defense technology company. And John leads all aspects of the IT strategy and the IT at Northrop Grumman. He's been with Northrop Grumman since 2017 and has been in his current role since 2020. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
Srini is the Chief Strategy and Chief Information Officer of FM Global. FM Global is a specialty insurance company focusing on commercial property. It's based in Johnston, Rhode Island, and manages total premiums of more than $9 billion. FM Global is a mutual organization. It's essentially owned by its clients. And Srini has been in this role since 2019 and has a lot to share about strategy and the IT purview. John, I thought we would start with you. You often describe Northrop Grumman as a technology company, and obviously, being in charge of the technology strategy is therefore very important. And you also orchestrate different strategies across the different business units and other areas of the business. And I wonder if you can share with us a little bit about your strategic planning process and how you go about that.
Thanks, Alex. First, thank you for having me, and happy to talk about our digital strategy and what that means. I think really right now for CIOs, this is a new age, right? Where the technology is key to the business. It's really a lever, not just a utility. And so at Northrop Grumman, our strategy, the technology strategy, is really a differentiation of the business strategy, right? So our CEO has a four-pillar strategy. One is technology differentiation. And so what we do is really look at where the business aspirations are, what's needed to achieve those business aspirations. It really does take us out of just being that utilitarian kind of IT organization to really a business enabling organization where in today's market, you can't actually thrive without having technology as an enabler. And mm-hmm. so what's nice about it is there are four business units and I have four CIOs that run those business units. So they are very intimate with the aspirations of those business units. But at an enterprise level, we're bringing all of that together and providing the guidance so that we're all moving and rowing in the same direction. And so that's actually the key to, in my opinion, a successful strategy that not only are the kind of business units making their objectives and achieving their aspirations, they're doing that with an enterprise approach that actually, in my opinion, is a force multiplier for us to be able to be better as a company, be better to be able to both vertically and horizontally integrate. And so I think that's key. The next is really using data to reimagine the strategy and to be the fuel for the future, right? So mm-hmm. being able to make more informed decisions, being able to really understand the impacts of those decisions. And for us, we talk a lot about digital thread. We talk a lot about digital twins. And so that has become a little bit of a buzzword. But what I want to do is kind of talk about why that's so very important for aerospace and defense. So first of all, we make very exquisite capabilities, everything from the James Webb telescope to the stealth bomber. And so these things are really expensive. And our customers are really challenging the triple constraints, right? Cost, schedule, and budget. They want you to do it faster. They want you to do it cheaper. And they don't want you to actually take any scope out of the picture, right? And so the only way to do that is to actually be able to transform and actually live in the model, meaning I actually build everything, I understand the cost, I understand the performance. Before I do a weld, before I turn a wrench, I truly understand the performance and capabilities of the platform that I'm gonna go build. That is the only way to keep pace with what is happening. So if you think about how we're changing at Northrop Grumman, our competition isn't the rest of A&D. Our competition is the nation states who are uninhibited with how they can take technology to the future, right? So we have a lot of things that are challenging us. The only way to do that is to keep pace, is to really look at how we can accelerate. And I think the last panelist talked about moving faster, right? And so right. we really do have to look at how do we accelerate using our digital culture, using model-based engineering, and then applying that to the data. And so from a technology standpoint, data is key. You got to curate those models that you would use to build an aircraft, a rocket, or a satellite. And then the other part is really kind of about how do we take our culture into a hyper-automation approach, right? So mm-hmm. how do we put automation not only into the IT hands, but into the business's hands and everyone else so that if there is a process we're repeating, we're going to automate it. And then the last thing I'll end on, what is great about this technology age is how many of us have heard, don't automate a bad process.
Yeah.
I would tell you that technology has turned that on its head, right? I actually want to automate first, because when I digitize and automate, I can visualize it. I can do the business process re-automation much, much faster because I visualize it. I don't have to do all the interviews. And so it really is a game changer for us to look at and re-challenge what was old wisdom of don't automate a bad process. I tell you today, go automate everything you can and then optimize it from there.
Thank you, John. That's fairly comprehensive. I really appreciate it. Really quite vivid from strategy to the execution piece. Srini, let's take this back to strategy. So you are not only a senior most technology executive, but you also wear the prominent strategy hat as a chief strategy officer. And maybe before we talk about how you go about strategic planning and what it means for you, tell us like the rationale, like why did FM Global decide to combine those two roles in one person?
Absolutely, Alex. I think the The kind of core premise, I think, well, this is, as you introduced me, it's a relatively a recent development. This is not something we've had in a while, for a long time. And as our executives started to look at the next kind of 5 to 10 years and see what are some of the key areas for us to invest in, build the capability, which will can add to our sources of differentiation, they kind of recognize technology is going to be an area. And to make sure that there is very strong alignment between technology and our business needs, they felt kind of having it intertwined, I think would, again, it doesn't guarantee it, but it does de-risk kind of technology, kind of working on things that are not aligned with the business and vice versa, and making sure the technology has a seat at the table when those decisions are being made. So there's an opportunity both to influence them as they're being made, but also make sure there is very little lost in translation when we actually need to go and implement that.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. And I do want to follow up. I heard you previously talk about that, and you described it as a sort of Venn diagram. And one of the things you mentioned, technology and the business, one of the items that came up actually in the previous panel is the change management aspect. And you have previously talked about how to bring all of these pieces together. I wonder if you could quickly elaborate on that as well.
Yeah, sure, Alex. I think over decades and years of kind of doing before digital was even kind of popular, I think the lesson learned for in the implementation of successful initiatives, whether it be technology or not, kind of I've learned in the school of hard knocks that there are essentially three key ingredients. One is kind of strong alignment with the business strategy and a clear understanding of what success looks like, what the business outcome you're looking for, A. B, the change management kind of foundation, because at the end of the day, it can be the best idea. And I know the previous panel also touched on it. Yep. You could have the best solution and it can sound wonderful on paper, but till you get the adoption and you get the skill sets and the mindsets change, it's going to be very pretty shelfware. And it doesn't matter how good or how elegant the technology solution is. So I think the change management is a kind of a broad kind of term, and I think there is a lot of art and science to it. And I think really having that as a core foundation. And third, of course, the third kind of leg of the stool as we talk about it is the technology and the tools that clearly are kind of the solution itself. But till you get some of those foundation on strong alignment with kind of the business outcome and the value, and make sure you've got the foundation of change management and those practices, any significant implementation, whether it be technology or any other organizational, from my experience, is not going to anywhere near the kind of results you would like to.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. One last question on the topic of strategy before we get to our audience poll. Both of you actually in your respective roles and organizations need to apply both a really long-term strategic planning horizon. I think Srini, FM Global, you look into the future like 30, 40 years with some of your analysis. John, some of your projects, the platforms that you develop also require investments into the future, massive investments. And at the same time, technology evolves so quickly. Srini, very quickly, how do you balance the long-term strategic planning horizon with kind of the dynamism in the short term?
Yeah, I think our planning process, Alex, is kind of, I think is built on kind of some key, very strong foundational tenets. You mentioned we're a mutual. What that means is our clients are our owners. So there is very strong shared purpose and stakeholder alignment. Secondly, you mentioned we've been around for 188 years. And for pretty much all those 188 years, we've done just one thing. We focused on commercial property insurance. And you kind of put those two together. If you do only one thing and you've been doing it for almost 200 years, you better do it really well. Otherwise, you're not going to be around for very long. So we have a kind of a specialized business model, I think probably the only insurance company of our size who doesn't use actuaries. We use an engineering-based model. And if you kind of put those together, those form the kind of the foundational tenets on which we kind of then build our strategic planning process and decide where we want to go and not want to invest. And clearly, there is a big part where we have a department which is called a research department, And they're truly, by very definition, looking at long term. What is the next technology? What is the next technique? And then we kind of look at more from a, so that gets to your kind of 20 plus year time frame. But then we also recognize we need to solve problems and opportunities which are kind of more closer to our door. So then we get to our 3-year strategic plan where we kind of start to think about what is it we want to do? And then we kind of further, it's again a mix of art and science, a lot of discussion with our executives, which then kind of further funnels into a 1-year set of objectives where we really kind of take what is it we want to do to what is it we can do and what is it we should do. And then we start to get into the fun process of budgeting and kind of resource planning around that. And so that getting to, and then the kind of the process doesn't end there. It's really cascading that down to our departments, our divisions, so that every employee has a clear sense of what is it their priorities are and how they align with our overall company's priorities.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. John, anything that is materially different in terms of the balancing the long-term and shorter-term strategic planning horizon at Northrop Grumman?
I'd quickly add that we have institutionalized a process called Future Back, right? So we look to the future, and then we walk it back to where we are to really understand where the opportunities are, where the gaps are. It may be where we want to actually go invest. It may be where we actually need to mature the technology that we need for the future ourselves. And so we have this process where we really look at where we think the company needs to go. And much like Srini, we're aerospace and defense, so we know our customers. We know what they're trying to do. And so what we do is we look at what their needs of the future are and then walk that back. And then we work through kind of figuring out whether we need partners, we need acquisitions, we need to create new technology ourselves. So that's how I would add
wonderful. Thank you.
From a future standpoint.
That makes sense. And let's shift to the digital capabilities and pulling up the results of our audience poll here. And let's start there. So the question was, you know, what are the biggest barriers to advancing and maintaining digital capabilities at your organization? And very interesting, not surprisingly, but the operating model comes out at top, closely followed by the infrastructure. So two legacy things that often stand in the way. I think it's very, you know, confirming that the topic that we're discussing here is relevant, but the two of you, maybe John, start with you. Any things that jump out at you as being surprising or confirmation of what you would have thought here?
I think that it's more confirming than surprising, right? Mm-hmm. So I think particularly for companies that have a legacy of not necessarily being born digital, you deal with tech debt quite frequently. The way of new capabilities have now made your operating models often antiquated with how you want to consume capabilities, how you want to consume and adopt technologies. And so I think as we have the opportunity to kind of talk through that, we'll be breaking through those barriers. I think, you know, I alluded to some of the changes we're making from a thinking about things differently, right, with respect to, you know, the way it used to be with not doing a process until you had fully re-engineered it and saying that's no longer needed. And so I think that's the case. I think the thing that did surprise me, though, is skills and mindset.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
I would have thought that would have been a little higher with respect to, you know, what people thought was a challenge or an obstacle. And I'll turn it back to you and Srini.
Yeah, Srini, actually, I was going to ask you that. So both, for me, actually, digital literacy and skills and mindsets are a bit of a surprise here. I know you think about these things a lot, Srini. Would you care to comment on that and elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, I think both of you touched on it, right? As the shelf life of tools and technologies become shorter, to me, skills become more important than certificates. And I was kind of looking at a Microsoft, I think it's called the Future of Work or the Work Trend Index study of 30,000 people last year. And the top three factors in this kind of age of AI, specifically generative AI, the top three skill sets leaders believe are key to success are analytical judgment, flexibility, and emotional intelligence.
Yes.
In short, mindset and skill set over tool set. And so I think when and kind of company like John and ours, when you have been around for as long as our companies have been around, I think legacy is part of the equation. There's kind of no way you can kind of hide from it. It is. I think the key thing is, how do you, I think we have strengths and advantages that companies who are quote unquote non-legacy or native, kind of digitally native, don't have, right? For in our industry, we have all this data of 188 years. We have data, we've seen kind of ups and downs, we've seen different cycles, we have the expertise. So for us, our digital journey is, how do we harness that and how do we tap into it? And I think that's where we're tapping into our data, tapping into our expertise, and our relationship with our clients is where I think we have tried to focus on, recognizing we do need to tackle legacy infrastructure. Those to me are a given, and we kind of chip away at that over time. But to me, I don't think that has been the key challenge for us and kind of held us back. Yes, could it, if you solve it, could we go faster? Absolutely. But I think to me, it is around those skill sets and mindset and leveraging our data, our expertise, our client relationships, which I think are key to our success today, but as well going forward.
Great. And staying on this for just a second, I know you, Srini, think a lot about the employee experience, not just the client and partner and customer experience. And I think you previously talked a little bit about both the importance of existing talent and acquiring and bringing on new talent. Can you briefly talk about that?
Yeah, I think, Alex, I think it is getting the balance. I think finding the balance between people who already know our business and have those relationships and people who are probably more versed in the new technologies or new techniques. And we recognize we need both of those. So we kind of bring people kind of from those different backgrounds. Clearly, the latter one we've had to hire quite a bit. And then the question of people starting from different backgrounds, then how do you so people starting from different positions, and how do you bring them along together and work on those kind of skill sets like the emotional intelligence, the flexibility? Because going forward, I think that to me provides the common kind of glue. And in the previous panel, we talked about the importance of values and culture. I think that to me, kind of you bring people from those backgrounds together, whether it's new or people who've been around, and kind of get them focused on driving that customer value.
That's great. And John, let me take this as a cue to go back to you. Emotional intelligence has come up prominently. I know you also think a lot about the combination of hard skills and soft skills in what is a very complex business like yours. And then, of course, there's the layer of like technologies, AI, generative AI, and so forth have come up. How does that influence how you look at the existing skills and talent, but also looking into the future?
Yeah, so I would say for us, culture, which goes along with kind of emotional intelligence, is key, right? So the culture that we bring really is one of our key differentiators as an aerospace and defense company. I love what Srini said about, I think he said skill set and mindset. I think that's also kind of key. And Srini, I'll probably steal that from you at some point. But I really do think that it really is about hiring folks with, I'd add to what Srini said, with not just the skill set, but the aptitude and the fire in their belly, right? Yeah. So meaning that they have the aptitude to do more than what you're hiring them for. And they're true technologists. What I mean by that is they have that kind of desire to continue to keep pace with the changing landscape of technology. I think what we've seen is a lot of folks get fatigued because that shelf life of their skill set has become much shorter than it used to be. And if you don't have that fire in your belly to kind of keep learning, keep reinventing yourself. So I think that is a key quality that when I look for new talent, that they're really just at heart technologists, because you know that they're going to put the effort in to keep pace. And in this market, that's more of what I need, is that person that is really going to look at what's coming next and how do I get prepared, versus you having to pull the people along to say, I need you to learn this new skill set. They're already pushing the rest of the team that this is the new thing. Let's go figure it out.
Wonderful. Thank you. I like this aptitude and fire in the belly. Very quickly, a little bit of time left. if both of you have to name like one digital capability that is on the top of your list of priorities for the next months and the rest of the year, Srini, let's start with you. What's the one digital capability that you're thinking about?
I think it is generative AI. And kind of fully understanding kind of the full implications and the opportunities.
Thank you. John, anything, or is it similar for you?
Very similar. I think we're looking at how do we apply both AI to our products and the kind of right way, reasonable way, and that we're doing it in alignment with all the regulations and requirements, but also how do we empower each employee with that? Yeah. So both a product view and an employee view, and then leveraging that to kind of first take away the dull, dirty and dangerous capabilities and statements of work, right? That people really don't want to do. And then we pull them in from that.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. So much more to discuss, but unfortunately we are out of time. Thank you both for sharing so much, and best of luck to you personally and of course the organizations that you lead, and hopefully we'll see you back here soon.